Excision number 11922, reel 2.
Mr. P.V. Jenkins, reel 2. You were just telling me about cleaning the dictionary.
Yes, it was impossible. So, of course, and with the sandstorms out there, the sandstorms, it would get into anything. No matter how tight anything was, the sand would still get in. And you'd have hailstones out there in a certain part of the year, as big as your fist. Huge.
You were telling me how you clean the dictionary.
Yes, just using sand.
Just rubbing sand?
Yes, just using sand as if it's just like earth, you see. And don't forget this, mind, when you talk about the Western Desert, it didn't a case of all lovely silk sand. The Western Desert comprises of escarpments, hills, stone, shrubbery, and parts soft sand, where vehicles have been known to sink. And when we used to have a brew up, there are times when we couldn't get sand, what we call sand, to put with petrol, to ignite with get a light, to boil for a cup of tea. There were times when it was on such a part of the desert, it was all stone and shrubbery. And there was escarpments like hills and mountains, you know. And of course, we were operating well in off the sea now, see, well in. Well, we got up to a place called El Alagela. That's about 20 miles the other side of Benghazi. Now then, we are remaining there now. There's still about 800 miles to go between there and Tunis. Well, we never knew. And our vehicles were in such a state that perhaps they couldn't risk going that distance more. Well, with that then, on comes Hitler. Now then, he got a six-wheeled armoured car with a six-pounder gun on. Our biggest gun on our tank was a two-pounder. So you can just imagine the panic. I mean, an armoured car would go twice as fast as a tank, for a start. Well, we'd driven all the way back.
This was Rommel's Africa Corps.
Rommel's Africa Corps. Now, whether our people knew about them building up their supplies there, the Germans, we didn't know. Or that we didn't know, anyway. And it's obvious the higher-ups didn't know.
What do you remember about Rommel's counterattack at Alagela?
Well, he was a terrific general in this respect, that everybody thought good of him. A British forces now I'm talking about. And it appeared on our orders would be stuck on a post, typed, you know, that not to take so much faith, if you like, of Rommel. He's still our enemy, you see. Well,
so the British authorities thought there was too much respect being shown to Rommel.
Not for us to show it. Not for us to show too much the type of thing that he's a great man and all this and that, you see. Well, now, of course, Wavell, they removed from Wavell to India. He had one eye, Wavell did. Anyhow, we chased all the way back. We comes right back to El Alamein.
What do you remember about that? Retreats to...
What do I remember about it? Well, it appeared... One day, it appeared... I think it was Auchinleck was the commander then. Or Ritchie, I can't quite remember. And it says... praising us for the good work we done. And... that we've got him in a box. We got the enemy trapped and this and that. The next day, up, pack up. Quick as you like, it's panic stations now. We are retreating now all the way back. Now our troops remained in Tobruk, and the Germans surrounded Tobruk now. Right? So we come all the way back to El Alamein. And when we get back to El Alamein, now then, I was a party detail now to go into that position over there to guide vehicles that had gone astray. To guide them in to wherever we were, you see. And Well, that was that. So the next thing now, we moved to Heliopolis, our company, Heliopolis. Whilst they're building up supplies now, there's Montgomery on the scene now, you see. And they're building up now. Mina Camp, where I was, it was packed jammed with the island, the 51st Island Division, 4th Indian Division. Oh, there was a tremendous build up there. What they're doing, they're building up now our forces ready with Montgomery. Well, just before that, now we are detailed to lay mines in a place called Siwa, S-I-W-A. And what the idea was, now we are driving personnel, and yet we were detailed to do that job. What it was, and the mines, the detonators, the gelinite was made in Scotland, and the actual casein was made in Egypt. I think there's 48 sticks of gelinite in each mine. The Mediterranean is there, the Siwa track is there, and the idea was, if our ploofs are deployed that side, and Rommel is coming down with his forces, that he's got to come into the minefield, and he's trapped. But it didn't work out that way. Rommel had halted at El Alamein, just before El Alamein. Where did he halt? Where was he halted now? Was it Saloum now and Sidi Barani now? Not so far. It's not so far from Alexandria, see? He stayed there because his lines of communication was hundreds of miles, which was a deterrent to him, because the only port he could use of any significance was Benghazi.
Had you yourselves laid the mines at sea?
Yes, we laid them. Yes, we laid the mines.
What, hundreds of them?
Yes, and I tell you the way we laid them, I remember that now quite well. We laid them like, say there was a tier down here, well, the next tier then would be in between. You know, like...
in the space.
Staggered in between. See? Yes, we lay those mines. So we goes now to a place called Heliopolis. That is just outside Cairo. They got the fastest train in the world here, apparently. Well, we're there now, and we're on detail. Now, in the meantime, they're shipping out millions of tons of stuff to build up Montgomery's forces ready for the big push, you see, the big campaign. Anyway, we goes from there then to Haifa, and we are told that when we're going across the Sinai Desert, to keep to the crown of the road, which is not a road actually, it's a track, because if it went too near the edge, well, it would just crumple, see. Well, we goes to Haifa, and we're in Haifa for about 3 months, and we're on detail there, normal detail, you know. And we go from there, we got to go back now up the desert, up the Western Desert. Well, we're travelling all day now, we get to Alexandria. Now, in the meantime, the big push have started. I think Montgomery had 480 guns, artillery guns. I think it was 480 or 500, you can't remember. Anyway, there's quite a number of casualties at El Alamein. I did have the photograph of the cemetery, but coming home, yeah, you know, things go astray then, like, see. Well, we follows up now, behind the scene now, and we get our unit went up so far as Sousse, Sfax, and then about Sousse and Sfax, now they're already resorts now, see. And the funny thing about Sousse and Sfax, you know, the red poppies in Flanders.
Yes.
Now, it's a funny thing. The war was on out there, and there were yellow poppies. Now we're coming into the green part of the country now, aren't we? We're coming to the sea now, aren't we? I mean, when we were inland, it was nothing but desert. You know, sand, bricks and shrubbery and what have you. Just like if it was on the moon, as a matter of fact. See? So he gets up now to Sousse, Sfax, and just outside Tunis. And there was a terrific war going on out there. Because how they survived, I don't know, them Germans. Because they was blasted, bombed from the sea, from the air. Our forces had surrounded them because they was in a pinch, see? What had happened? They was coming from Iran and all them places, and they got defeated there. So they were in a pincer now in Tunis, in Tunisia, you see. So they got all the Americans and the British coming in from the Mediterranean end, and you got the British then coming up from the Egyptian end. Understand? So they got the millions of troops there. They can't move. Well, in the end, they surrendered. In the meantime, I'll tell you, there was no American troops from the Egyptian end. They only come in from the Mediterranean end. So that was about 1942, wasn't it? When they come in from that end. Because it was over in about 1942. But that's the end they come in. From this end, nothing. All British and colonial. See? Sudanese, if you like, well, they weren't taking no part in the fighting. They were guard duty and all that sort of thing, see? Now, the Egyptians, they never took part in it. All they were doing was guarding searchlights or shining searchlights on the Suez Canal. See? Anyway, when we first arrived out in Egypt, we was on detail now bringing vehicles from Alexandria down the Suez Canal Road, which had been sent from Britain, you know, to Port Said. That's the Mediterranean end of the Suez Canal, and we were bringing them down, see. So when they were brought down, of course they had to be not reassembled, but go around with a spanner with different things, and to make them worthy for the desert, you see. And of course when there were times on the desert when it was absolutely purgatory, because there was no war going on. There was nothing to do. You tried to make your own entertainment. Nothing to do. It was the same thing day after day for weeks on end.
How did you entertain yourselves?
Well, concert parties. Now, I myself, actually speaking, I broadcast from the Middle East, from Cairo. I got the paper in there, if you wanted to see it. I broadcasted from the Middle East. There was a lull on, and Carol Levis was in the Middle East, and my commanding officer wrote to Carol Levis saying that he had a couple of people in the unit that he would like you to hear them, like, see. And I was allocated. There was driver P.V. Jenkins. Did you want my number, by the way? My army number?
If you remember it, yeah.
Yeah, T-1-7-2-9-2-1. That's my army number. So we comes back to Cairo now from the desert, mine. Find our own way, mine. And gets in touch with Carol Harris. And they allocated me. I sang one song, Yodeler, actually I was. It was Jimmy Potter. I didn't know that man, mine. Piano and drums. Driver P.V. Jenkins, Yodeler. And I sang a song. And he said, could you sing another one to make it last 7 minutes? And it was for the forces in the Middle East. You know, entertainment for the forces in the Middle East.
To broadcast it.
To the Middle East forces.
Carol Levis used to do discoveries.
That's right. He used to do discoveries. That's right. So anyway, yeah. After that was all over. Now, I think we come down on leave, I think. After that was all over, then we goes back up the desert to our unit, and then we're organising what we could say. Now, we had a harmonica band, a mouth organ band. We bought the mouth organs in Alexandria, and so that was the entertainment we had, you know, like a nonsense thing of it. But it was something, see.
But did the concert parties go around and tour the other unit?
Oh, no, no, just your own. Oh, you couldn't do that. You couldn't do that, see. Because, I mean, your next unit might be 50 or 60 miles away. You understand me? It wasn't like on the continent where everything is on top of one another. I mean, our next unit could possibly be 20, 30, 40 miles away. Don't know. See?
Just coming back to those Germans who surrendered.
Yeah.
Did you see German prisoners?
Yes.
How did they compare with the Italian prisoners?
Oh, well, of course, the way you looked upon the German prisoner was he's the equal of the British, you see. He's the equal of the British. Now, the Italians, they didn't like us because we are superior to them, put it that way. See? And when the war was over, it just might as well not have happened, because there was no rejoicing down in Egypt, because the religion is all entirely different. I mean, they didn't want us there. Actually speaking, they were prepared for Rommel's lot to arrive there. That's what it amounted to.
Did the Egyptians show hostility to the British troops?
Oh, yes, on times. They thieve, they drob you. At times, there were such things that they were after their army paybook and all. Oh, yes, there were times when they were really hostile to you.
What good was the army paybook to them?
Well, no good. The army paybook is no good, but a lot of soldiers kept their money in the paybook, so see? Understand me now? They kept their money, and if they thought they could pinch the paybook, you got your money. Anyway,
did you have anything stolen?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. When we was up in the other side of between, I forget which one came first, was Sousse or Sfax? Now, I think Sfax came first and Sousse after. When we was between Sousse and Tunis, I was in what they call a group workshops, an advanced group workshops, which means now it was a party that for vehicles that were breaking down, you had an advanced group workshops. As I told you, they would, any parts of a lorry that couldn't be moved, they would take the parts off and keep the other, because everything was moving so fast. It was non-stop. Once Montgomery come on the scene, he had so much stuff. The planes was terrific. He had so much stuff. Everything was moving up 100 miles an hour, if you like. The space they were absorbing up through the quickness of the advance was out of this world. See? Because we had the stuff. Now, when Wavell's 30,000 were there, he had to box clever, he had to go so far, and that was that, you see, and build up then a bit of supplies. Now, any planes that we seen in Wavell's 30,000, if I remember rightly, we had a few Mark III Blenheim bombers, so many Hurricanes, very few, a couple of Lysander spotter planes, and what do we have? I think that's all we had. A few Maryland bombers, few mosquitoes. Very, because the minute you heard a plane, you took cover. As much cover as required. There's nothing to shelter under, nothing that. You just run that way or run that way. And at one time, we was in these little tents, they're only that high. But you dug down, see, so that you had that bit of extra right then, see, when you dug down. Well, it's all necessary all the time, the slit trench that was on all the time. And we heard this crack of machine gun fire, and we thought, my God, what's this? See? What it was? It was the fighter planes now with the shark's head, which we had never seen with wavers. We never seen any sight like that, you see. Never seen nothing like that. You've seen an individual plane. It was an odd hurricane over there, or an odd hurricane over there, you see. Now, they were so confident, the Germans, that this had come through now with their fighter planes, with their Messerschmitts, and you could nearly touch them. That's how confident they were. Now, transport was the first to be attacked, because that is the thing. If they stop the supplies, the forward troops can't operate, because there's no supplies getting to them. So we was continually under attack, mine. And the only defense that we had was a Bren gun on a truck. And the team wasn't allowed to open fire unless they had permission from the commanding officer. See? You weren't allowed to say, oh, it's a plane yard, I'm going to have a go at it. See? So anyway, yeah.
You were about to tell me a story about having something stolen in Tunis.
Oh, yes. It's between Sousse and Tunis, and our cook vehicle now was in the green fields now. We're in the grass part of it now, and this is the first time I've seen what's them things that eats all the food up now?
Locust.
I'd never... millions of them, like a cloud. Anyway, when we checked our cook wagon, and don't forget, mind, we're there, mind, in the there, these Arabs, they are thieves. They had come up from the where they were living, well, in tents and all, huts and what have you, and they pinched, I think it was tea, salt, malaha they call it, or salt, and a good bit of stuff they pinch, and we're in the vehicle. If you understand me now, that's how crafty they are. Oh, they do say, mind, that if you're sleeping in a tent, you've got your rifle alongside you. They take the shoelaces out of your boots. You understand me now?
Yes.
That's the type of people they are, see? Anyway, we get hold of them, and we do duff them up a bit, mine. To let them know that we know dummies, like. Anyway, now, the war now come to an end out there. And Churchill come out there, Montgomery, and every man's yak had to be on parade, sort of thing. All them, because he's inspecting the forces, thanking them for them doing the salute and all that business, see? Well, that was all over. Now, we comes back to base. And you might as well think, there's nothing happened. Now, in this country, when you're coming home, there's cheering and God knows what celebrations. Nothing at all, because the religion out there is entirely different, you see.
What did people think of Montgomery in the 8th Army?
Oh, they thought he was good, because he was a type of man that he'd get them all around him, and he'd be talking to them like a father. Understand? Explain it to them that they got a job to do, and they're going to do it, sort of thing. See?
Did you actually meet him?
No, I never met. The only thing I seen him was driving past, like when the big parade was on. No, I didn't meet him.
Were you proud to be in the Eighth Army?
Yes. And I'll tell you something else, that once you're in uniform, you were somebody of importance. Because when we used to walk down the streets of Cairo or Alexandria, you were somebody. Understand now? You were in uniform, you were somebody. And we got presented with have I got the ribbon on there now? The Eighth Army ribbon and the clasp. It's a little figure eight that goes on the ribbon, see? And yes, when you're in uniform, you are somebody, especially a British uniform. Although our uniforms is absolute rubbish, it's only because the Americans, where they opened epaulettes and the collars and ties, that they allowed us then the same thing. But your uniform wasn't made to that extent. You turned them back yourself and had them pressed back, you know. Well, there's an example, but there is it on you?
So
yeah, it's an example there, see? But when we first joined up, it was buttoned up to the neck, you see? So, now then, we comes back to Alexandria. Now then, they started now the invasion. They've already started the invasion of Sicily and Italy whilst they were still fighting in North Africa. They're ahead of themselves. Understand me now? We're using the fields now in Tunisia and all them, because it's only a short hop across to Sicily and Italy. It's only a short hop. They did tell me that Sicily surrendered as soon as one of our cruisers showed its nose in offshore. That's it, they give up, you see. Same as they did in Jersey. They did no fighting in Jersey. All they did was we give it in because you couldn't hold it. And then the same thing applied with us. The Germans couldn't hold it. And all they seen was a cruiser out there, and that was it. Anyway, we come back now to Alexandria. And we got a three shift going now. 10-ton vehicles we got, Max and White's. And we got three ships taking supplies to the harbour of Alexandria for the invasion, to keep the things moving to Italy, and because it's only straight across. And for the invasion, you see. So anyway, I'm sure we goes back up the desert. I'm sure we did. I'm sure we went right back up, because that's where I come home on. I'm coming home now. I had been out there now. I come home on what they call I got it in the pay book now. Python, I think it's called Python.
Yes.
26 group.
Yes, it was called Python.
Yeah, 26 group. Now, I come home from the other side of Benghazi. And now, I wasn't happy about coming home. If you understand me, don't get me wrong, I was happy in one way, but I wasn't over the moon. I'd been out there so long that I wasn't jumping for joy.
You got used to it,
I got used to it. These people now that have just come home from the Gulf, they jump in with joy because it's such a short stint. But I had been away so long, and don't forget this, mind, when you're thinking about it, 6 months married, you know, you've got to start, you don't know how it's going to work out, is it going to be successful?
You'd only been married 6 months before you went out.
Yes, you see, she was only 18, see.
Was there anything about being in the desert that